This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you, Sabrina, for the news. Good afternoon. This is Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm with you until 1 o'clock alongside
Frida Liu
and Christine Wong.
A whole bunch of stories are lined up for you today on this fresh Monday, the 14th of May, 2018. We're going to be starting off, though, with a story about how 75% of new mothers in Malaysia quit their jobs due to a lack of work and flexibility, and employers should be worried. This is something
75?
We're going to be talking about. 75%. Story number two, GE14. Sheer lucky coincidences or brilliant yet subtle social media strategizing by PH. Story three, I never thought I'd be saying that, you know. Story number three, your Spotify history could help predict what's going on with the economy. Story number four, a conflict resolution tactic is a sign of bad management, something we'll be covering then. And of course, with it being Monday, we'll give you some events that we think you should check out later on in the week. Let's start off with this story then about 75% of new mothers in Malaysia who feel the need to quit their jobs due to a lack of work flexibility. Chris?
Well, just yesterday, Malaysia celebrated Mother's Day, and that was really lovely, but apparently mothers in Malaysia are not having a great time in the workplace. So, as you said, Rich, 75% of new mothers in Malaysia have cited a lack of work flexibility as their top reason for leaving their jobs. Other reasons included concerns about poor childcare while they are at work, which was 60%, and having an unsupportive boss and work environment when it comes to balancing home and work life, which was 55%. Now, this study was conducted by the recruitment portal Monster on 2,600 respondents across Malaysia, Singapore, and the Philippines, which aimed to identify challenges women and working mothers face in the workplace. So we'll be focusing specifically on the data from Malaysia. So the study questioned working moms on their biggest worries when returning to work after having a child as well. 55% of respondents said that they struggle with the emotional process of leaving a newborn at home. 49% said that they only return to their jobs for financial reasons, and 47% worry about getting the right childcare in place to allow them to feel comfortable with returning to work. In terms of their biggest challenges, 53% listed struggling to balance their duties at work and demands from home. And also 32% said that they were not being awarded the same career opportunity. 38% said that they were not being awarded the same career opportunities as men. 32% had concerns over perceptions by their colleagues and their boss that would affect their career progression.
Okay, and I'm looking at this, right?
Yeah.
Not awarded the same career opportunities as men, and that's why they leave anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you know, this struggle with the emotional process of leaving a newborn at home, I really get it. You go through this thing, and I was really, really fortunate in the sense that I had a mate, I had a mother, whichever, and then I was working from home. And I was thinking that if I wasn't working from home, I probably would have quit.
Right.
You know, if I didn't have that option, that flexibility of working in an organization that allowed it, I probably would have quit.
And you know what is the really shocking thing is that only 28% of the women surveyed said that their workplace offers some form of flexibility or adjusted workloads for working mothers. So they don't really have a choice. Like, they have to either, they have to choose one or the other, basically, because they're not really given that space to actually figure out how they're going to balance, you know, their new lives.
Yeah. So, and you know, which sort of, you know, one thing that annoys me, and that's where 53% said they have to balance their duties at work and demands from home. I'm just thinking right there where the men come in.
I was just going to say the same thing.
Right?
Should the husband be doing a little bit more at home?
You know? So they'd be, you know, because it should be just as demanding for the man. And if the load is equally shared, probably they'll have less of this pressure. So that's conversation for another day, which I feel very strongly about. But
yes,
anyway.
No, for sure. I think, you know, there are definitely problems both at work and also in the kind of social hierarchy of everything that would contribute to this problem as well. And in terms of facilities as well, a lot of new mothers don't have the right facilities in the workplace to you know, live their lives. Only 12% said that their workplaces have a dedicated lactation room, and 10% said that they do not even have the option of a child daycare at work.
I mean, it's clear that, you know, women in Malaysia want to work, but like you say, Chris, they're not provided with the support environment or that business infrastructure that allows them to both care for their families and contribute to the workplace.
Yeah, you know, getting a helper from Indonesia 15, 16 years ago was about 400 ringgit, right? And that was the and it's gone up to more than double. And I mean, if you get someone from another country like the Philippines, it costs a lot. It's a lot of money. I'm just glad I had my kid when 15, 16 years ago. I don't know if I'll be able to
afford it now.
Yeah. You know, if I'm just starting out, I'm a young mother, I don't earn that kind of money yet, right? And it just,
I think for our company, we have it pretty good, right?
Yeah.
In that we don't necessarily have a dedicated lactation room, but there is a room that, you know...
We will.
Yeah, we will soon. Yeah. But there is a space that women can go and use. You know, our kids are allowed here in the office, and you know, it's kind of, you get pets and you get kids, and it's a very open office and very forward-thinking.
And fact of the matter is, we also give, you know, new mothers the opportunity to work from home, like you said, Frida. You know, and that's really what the solution comes down to, and it would be so easy because women clearly want to do the work. It's not that they want to take time off just for like for fun, right?
And I think by law it's 2 months, but you know, here at BFM we give it 3 months. And one of the things that's very progressive, and I don't think many companies do this, probably BFM, the 2 weeks paternity. You know, it's not much, but it's a start, and I don't think many organizations do that at all.
I think it makes a difference, though, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It certainly does. Okay, well, let's open up the phone lines, rather the WhatsApp messages. It's a story, right? So the headline was 75% of new mothers in Malaysia quit their jobs due to a lack of work flexibility and employers should be worried. Let us know if this has affected you in the past or if you're worried about it might be affecting you in the future. Get in touch via WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or get in touch via Twitter. We're at BFM Radio. Let's have a discussion about this. Let's move on to our next story, though, whilst we wait for those to come in. This is a beauty, this.
This is a very interesting story. So this came out in Digital News Asia last week, and this is working with the Centre of Applied Data Science, CAT. So there's a story that the report came out yesterday, but this is the premise of how the article came out last week about data analytics and how it actually made a lot of difference, right? So the Centre at CAT took upon themselves to find out what the sentiment was like online, right? So since the Cambridge Analytica scandal hit the infamous limelight, the hashtag delete Facebook movement made slow but steady progress among the Western region. So although it didn't severely impact the Malaysian Facebook population, what they did though, they used Twitter as the dominant source of data input for conducting any G14 sentiment analysis. This was last week before the results. So between March 1st and April 30th, 2018, they collected 118,491 tweets involving a G14 contents, which became the basis of the Malaysia's G14 sentiment analysis study. So back then, last week, from the get-go, we were able to identify one coalition clearly leading the way in leveraging social media to develop the sentiment polarity compared to the other coalition groups. So, of course, the BN coalition depended on standard influencer generated I Love My PM and manifesto-related postings that were not able to reach out the wider population of Malaysia. Pakatan Harapan Coalition, however, picked up on the burden of the rakyat sentiment, which was easy to elicit content creation from many influencers that believed that they were creating content from the rakyat's perspective. So this was the premise of it, and they came out with a full report yesterday. I think they were holding on to the report until the results came out. So follow on that, they actually studied tweets collected on the 8th and 9th of May, which was the last campaign day allowed on election day itself. And the focus in this rendition of study was to see if there was any sentiment at altering events that could happen within this time frame. And so they collected 155,615 tweets from 1st to 5th March, and then of course, together with the one on the 8th and 9th. To social media or not to social media, this was the analysis from tweets, and it's amazing. Said the biggest gap that they picked from the initial report was the social media maturity that the three competing coalitions had going to G14. So the first look was at Gagasan Sejahtera GS, an informal coalition between Parti Islam Malaysia PAS and Parti Ikatan Bangsa Malaysia Ikatan. So they chose to employ a more grassroots-driven engagement. It translates well for their personal touch-driven feel, consistently driven from the inception of the party. However, this left them going to election with almost bare minimum social media presence. And of course, so that's them. They also walked into G14 on a more neutral sentiment compared to the BN, which was saddled with heavy baggage of negative sentiments attributed from several legacy factors. While a lot of the chatter and content surrounding BN may be contrived as gossip or petty personal attacks, this is a typical sentiment position most long-term ruling parties heading into a general election will find themselves in. I mean, you've got a lot more baggage, I guess. So, and the whole premise of this study is sentiment analysis of the public, which by definition is heavily associated with personal emotions of people as well as active brand and stakeholder management by BN, right? So burden even further perceptions of power stronghold as well as numerous scandals and negative sentiments carried over from peculiar instances in GE 12, 13 and 14. So the PH coalition was the clear champion in terms of social media maturity. Walking to G14, faced with a growing perception that the Malaysian mainstream media is heavily controlled by the BNPH turned into it. To its active, mature, and highly connected network of social media interfaces going to G14. They've depended on their social media presence, not just as an election engine, but their way to get their message out to people and actively connecting any misrepresented content being delivered by the mainstream Malaysian media. So knowingly or unknowingly, by actively leveraging the social media of each component party in the PH coalition, they built a message of hope, unity, nationhood, that then became the overtone of the entire PH.
For sure.
Coalition. So, I mean... It ended off with, so the question to do or not to do social media, I don't think, you know, this just goes to show.
It's not even a question anymore.
So, yeah, right? And, you know, so how then, I guess, organizations have to look at building the right social media, whether it's for your company, your party, or even your country. This is really, really important. What's being collected out there, the sentiment, the keywords and all that. It's very interesting. I thought it was really interesting.
I think it's totally impossible in this day and age to ignore social media trends anymore, because they tell you so much about your demographic, whether you are a company or a political party. And I think, you know, hashtags like the Pulang Mengundi hashtag show clearly that, you know, the people of Malaysia wanted to be involved in politics again and wanted to actually take an active stance within, you know, taking action and trying to take part. So, you know, I think that nowadays you kind of have to pay attention to that, and you have to factor that in when you want to, you know, send whatever message that you want out to the public, and you have to think about what exactly they're sending you.
I think it certainly it really shows when you've had a traditional media here, as we know, that has been very heavy-handed.
Yeah.
And Twitter seemed to be that safe space for people that wanted to have a bit of a discussion and could, you know, they would have a certain amount of anonymity, but there'd also be people out there who'd be very, you know, open and saying what they wanted to say. But just sitting and watching traditional media and, you know, the news, news portals, the newspapers and TV, and just seeing that flip within just a very short space of time was really interesting to see.
Right. Yeah.
But I have been glued to Twitter for quite a couple of weeks, but the last couple of weeks has been crazy. Watching the discussions that are going on there and the retweets and the memes especially, that stuff that has been going backwards
been
and forwards. It's been really enjoyable to watch and just to see the amount of discourse that's happening.
Right. And if you're looking at that, I mean, because I know like with BN, they were also very aggressive in social media. But so They did it the wrong way. So they were not, I guess, not attending to the sentiment.
Yes. Correct.
And not addressing the sentiment.
They were pushing rather than listening.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought anyway.
Yeah, and I
we
really
can say all this now.
Yeah, I can.
But I really also enjoy, like you said, Rich, it's instantaneous. It's a live feed constantly. Yeah. So you should always be in tune with what, you know, the people want, really. Mm. And that's like things like Twitter especially are really, really good for keeping up with things live.
So no amount of social media, though, I guess can even if you've got the right thing and all, you know, it comes back to the four P's, right? You can do all the promotion you want, but if your product sucks, right? I'm just saying, right, that no amount of marketing will help you.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, we had to take a short break. When we come back, about how your Spotify history could help predict what's going on with the economy. Don't forget, though, we started off with a story about how 75% of new mothers in Malaysia quit their jobs due to a lack of work flexibility. Do let us know if this is something that's affected you in the past, or if you are worried that it might affect you in the future. Let's have a bit of a discussion. Some music coming up from the Goo Goo Dolls. It is Big Machine here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to BFM Enterprise Biz Bites. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with
Frida Liu
and Christine Wong.
For another 40 minutes or so, ladies and gents, we started off today's show with a story.
Feels
about...
Feels different today.
It does feel it different, does. Right? People were friendly on the roads, you know, there were smiling faces.
Spring in my step.
There were less flags around as well, I noticed.
That's
anyway,
nice.
75% of new mothers in Malaysia quit their jobs due to a lack of work flexibility. That was our lead story today. If this is something that's affected you or is likely to affect you in the future, do let us know. Christine, you also had another thing you wanted to add to that.
Yeah, I mean, if you have your own company and you're putting some policies in place to help new mothers, that'd be great to hear from you guys as well.
Anything you can help us out with, let us know. WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or on Twitter at BFM Radio. Now, this is a story that I really liked because it kind of relates to something I was thinking about over the weekend. I don't know if either of you follow kind of underground music trends here in Malaysia.
I'm not cool enough for that.
No, well, I'm not anymore. sure, but you know, there used to be a sentiment of anger. You know, so you got quite a big punk scene, you got quite a big hip hop scene, and it was a bit, you know,
grunge. So,
yeah, well. It kind of got me talking over the weekend as to whether or not the style and approach of music is likely to change now that we have a different government. You know how things have changed. People have been fighting for one thing or another. And now that you have it, you know, what do you kind of do? So this is a story about how it's slightly related, how Spotify history could help predict what's going on with the economy. New research suggests that what you listen to mirrors economic boom times and recessions. So it all comes down to measuring the economic sentiment. It's a way of gauging how people feel about the economy, which behavioral economists use to make predictions about how it will respond to different policies. For example, if people are generally pessimistic about the economy, then raising interest rates might encourage them to stop borrowing and spending by so much that it harms the economy. For some time already, researchers have been able to measure economic sentiment by analyzing language used in large numbers of online news stories and Twitter posts, as we know. But recently, researchers from Claremont Graduate University have shown that sentiment may be extracted from pop music top 100 lists and music platforms like Spotify. What's more, these new sentiment indicators are at least as useful as conventional surveys of consumer confidence. This is really interesting. The idea is that songs have an emotional component that anyone can relate to, encoded in musical attributes such as the song's energy, tempo, and volume. Online music services like Spotify already use these kinds of attributes to categorize songs and recommend new music, etc. So you can also understand the emotions expressed by songs from their lyrics, depending on your cultural background.
Okay. No, because this is just so interesting. I mean, if you would look at my Spotify list, right? The songs I had last week was, on a Tuesday, was A Change Is Gonna Come.
Yeah.
On Wednesday, we had Power to the People. This is Beatles and talking about a revolution.
Yeah.
And on May 9th, it was, you know, the Michael Jackson's Can You Feel It?
Chris.
The songs that I have.
And also you take a look at some of the, you know, interesting things that happen when, underground music becomes more popular. Take, for example, Childish Gambino's new track, Welcome to America, This Is America, right? That came out over the course of the long weekend and that has been playing everywhere. I think that was the number two trending video, music video on YouTube as well. Yeah. And that is so indicative of how America feels about their own country because everyone was listening to it. And it's such a weird expression of frustration that you can so clearly tell based on that alone.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, back in the mid 90s, Prodigy, do you remember those?
Yep.
When they were around, they were talking about Firestarter, you know,
yeah.
And this was because that there was a law being passed in the UK that stopped you from congregating if there were more than two people.
Right.
You know, so this all came out and there's this huge kind of backlash. And it's music is a clear indicator as to where society is.
I'll tell you one thing, though. In Malaysia last week, there wasn't a lot of Bruno Mars being played.
Do you know what? I have not seen a single post about that.
In fact, I
think maybe one post I've seen the entire time.
I've seen a few.
Was that Dr. George Lee?
No, it wasn't.
I've seen a few posts about Bruno Mars, but it was flooded and completely drowned by all the other things.
Now, I mean, the thing is, though, I mean, what they did, I mean, just to kind of prove this theory,
right.
they applied this technique to charts from before and after the 2008 global economic crisis. And they found that after the crash, the frequency of words associated with anger and disgust increased, while the frequency of words associated with trust decreased. This type of evidence strongly suggests that music's consumers' state of mind do have a bearing on what music they choose to pay for and listen to. Fascinating stuff.
I wonder if genre at all plays, you know, a part in that kind of study as well. You know what I mean? Because I think you would be more inclined to listen to like rock or like even rap, for example, or something like that in those times of kind of economic crisis because they represent like power to the people and protesting against the man and such like. So I think that'd be interesting to look at as well.
All right, let's have a music break then. Let's have something. It's the darkness,
but
I believe in a thing called love. Aww. Right here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Balanced Frank Medium, BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with
Christine Wong.
Frida Liu.
So we started off with 75% of new mothers in Malaysia have quit their jobs due to lack of work flexibility. Employers should be worried. We asked you for some messages and you delivered. What have we got?
Yeah, so this comes from Irene who says, The mother thing really worries me. I'm scared to death by nanny horror stories. That's why I'm trying to get stable part-time income and exploring whether or not I can start up my own thing just to ensure I can take care of my kids when the time comes.
Mm. It's worrying, right?
It's so, so terrifying.
Keep the messages coming in, 018-789-8899 or on Twitter at BFM Radio. You probably know that by now. We've been all over the place. Right, onto our final story before we get out to some events. A common conflict resolution tactic is a sign of bad management.
Yeah,
it's so Motivational Monday, Chris.
Yeah, but this is motivational in terms of now you know what not to do. So this comes from Fast Company. And basically, the most common reason internal issues typically arise in a business is because of a lack of aligned execution. It's a leader's job to get everyone pulling in the same direction, but many resort to a compromise that does anything but, which is agreeing to disagree.
Aha! So here is why that old thing.
Yeah, so here is why agreeing to disagree so often fails and what you should do instead. So the agree to disagree outcome is the escapist route in a conflict. So a manager ends a conflict by getting all parties to tolerate but not necessarily accept the outcome. This often means trying to keep egos intact even at the cost of what's best for the company or team. So people will continue to try to convince one another of their own opposing views, merely tolerating the one that they've all nominally agreed to. Okay. By agreeing to disagree, managers essentially commit their teams to a painfully slow execution that's doomed to fail. So what could be the alternative to this? The alternative is to disagree, then commit. So how this works is basically you combine democracy and dictatorship in that order is what the article says.
It's funny you should say that.
Is what the article says.
Right.
So democracy is encouraging everybody to participate in the decision making, but dictatorship is closing people off later to the decision making process, which is then typically aligned and disciplined later. So here are the steps involved.
Will you inspire it?
maybe I was subconsciously inspired.
Yes. I don't know.
But okay. So here are the steps involved in a disagree then commit approach. So number one is you disagree. So you encourage free discussion before reaching any type of decision. Expect and invite people to have strong opinions. Disagreement here is a good thing. If two people always agree, one of them isn't really needed.
But don't put it on Twitter.
Maybe not do that. This is within the company.
Right.
Number two is to commit. So with or without a consensus, a decision must be taken within a time frame that the manager needs to make everyone aware of from the get-go. At the end of that period, the onus is on the leader to decide on the best course of action. In cases when disagreements remain at the end of the debate, and chances are they will, leaders need to be tiebreakers, making a decision that aligns with the organization's best interest and framing their choice precisely that way. This commitment stage cannot be glossed over, and you certainly cannot start executing before then.
Okay.
Now, the third step is to iterate and improve. Leaders should make room for divergent perspectives throughout the execution, even though everyone is already committed to the same course of action. They can encourage feedback in private, not public.
There you go.
Some people should listen to that.
And iterate as needed, but they do not open the floor up to another team brainstorm midway through. So you make the decision, you commit to the decision. At this stage, the leader is responsible to make sure progress is being made.
Mm-hmm.
I like this hybrid solution. A combination of democracy and dictatorship.
Yeah.
Yep.
Where have we heard that before? It's something familiar, right?
I don't know.
All right, let's move on before I get myself into trouble. Actually, I can't get into trouble. I can talk about it now. My word. I never thought I'd say that either. Right, we did start off with this story about how 75% of new mothers in Malaysia quit their jobs due to a lack of work flexibility. Do let us know, as we said, if it's something that has affected you, could affect you, or if you are, if you work for a company or a startup, a company that have some solutions to prevent this from happening in the future. Do let us know. We've got a few minutes left. We've got some suggestions of events that we think you might want to check out later on this week. 018-789-8899 is the WhatsApp number, or get us on Twitter at BFM Radio. Let's have some music. It is The Killers with Mr. Brightside here on BFM 89.9.
Build fortunes modestly. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9. It's our final talk set before we say goodbye for a little while, but we have some events that we think you might want to check out later on this week. Let's start off with the one you've got, Frida. These are all from Eventbrite, I believe.
Yes, and of course, you know, expect events to be less next week as Kwasa month begins this week, yeah? So there's one happening tomorrow, which is the Technopreneurship Time to Talk. This is from 8:30 to noon, and it's held at the International University of Malaya, Wales, which is... in Jalan Tun Ismail. And so Tanya Talks, the first Malaysian-based talk series, served as a platform to spread a valuable thoughts to the public as part of a community service. So the purpose of this event is technopreneurship, Time to Talk, and this is to create awareness among the young generations on current technology in business and how to utilize them to be more competitive. So speakers will present about their idea on technopreneurship and how the technology has helped their business, and is to help the young generation to look into the possibilities of innovation and technologies to initiate startup business. So I don't think they mention who the speakers are. You can check it out. Go to Eventbrite to find out. And it's free. It's free.
Chris?
Yeah. So here we've got an effective talent management and retention program. This is by Tic-Tac-Toe Consulting, happening on Thursday, May 17th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. This is taking place at Tic-Tac-Toe Consulting's training center on Jalan Tun Razak. It is free, which is nice. So organizations are continually challenged to identify ways to increase employee engagement. While changes in benefits, rewards, and compensation are often considered the best solution, engagement results seldom reflect significant improvement. Thus, the problem persists and organizations are not achieving their potential for enhanced engagement. So if you're the kind of person that wants to measure intrinsic behavioral factors that drive individual engagement and identify gaps between employee expectations and motivators, come along to this event and find out.
I've got a recruitment event. It is for Amazon Web Services Malaysia. This is happening on Thursday, May 17th, between 5:30 p.m. and 10. It's happening at Aloft KL. So that's in KL Central, 5 Jalan Station Central. It's free to get in. It's an event organized by Amazon Web Services. The objective is to connect with professionals in Malaysia to share Amazon's growth plan, their hiring needs, their culture, and most importantly, enjoying the company of each other. So the agenda, they have cocktails, starting at 5:30. There's a welcome speech at 6. There's a day in the life of a solution architect and a technical account manager. Dinner and drinks and networking from 7:30 p.m. onwards. It sounds like something that if this is your thing, you know, if you're into web services and you want to work for Amazon, this is probably something you should attend. Again, Thursday, May 17th, between 5:30 and 10 p.m. Before we wrap up, though, we've had a couple more messages that have come through regarding our first story. Let's just finally wrap up with these.
Yeah, so this comes from Raz, and our first story, if you missed it, was that 75% of new mothers in Malaysia quit their jobs due to a lack of work flexibility. So Raz says, some multinational corporations allow young mothers to work remotely from a home-based office. They work from home just like how they work in the office, using laptops, teleconferencing, and video conferencing. It's better to allow this and lose the talent. Mm. However, more often than not, they'll still end up with a daymate or helper because they have to focus on their work, and it's difficult when their young children are constantly looking for attention. But at least the mother has a peace of mind that their babies or kids are not being abused. When you have a good employee, you want to retain them at all costs.
True. True.
Very true. Mm.
Thank you very much for all of your messages and your feedback today. Of course, we will be back tomorrow, same time, same place, but we'll quickly run through the stories we covered. Of course, we did start off with 75% of new mothers in Malaysia quit their jobs due to a lack of work flexibility. We then had
the story around the Center of Applied Data Sciences, or the CATS. They did a study on whether the G14, whether sheer lucky coincidence or brilliant yet subtle social media strategizing by PH helped in the results.
We then moved on to how your Spotify history could help predict what's going on with the economy.
And then we talked about how agreeing to disagree is actually a sign of bad management.
Right. To wrap up then, don't forget, coming up after the 1 o'clock news, it is the Breakfast Grill replay, and it is Karim Raslan, the CRO of KRA Group. The Breakfast Grill continued their news coverage and analysis post G14 with Karim Raslan of KRA Group as they looked at what to expect from the new government. That's all coming up after the 1 o'clock news. Meanwhile, let's have some music to play us out. It's Def Leppard with a little bit of Hysteria here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.